Good morning, everyone. Well, as I was copying this presentation this morning off on my memory stick, my wife is noticing my anxiety this morning. She says, you know, you have a pattern of doing this, of getting yourself into this situation. Why do you do that? So I go in and I copy the file off and I notice a presentation that says Sunday sermon. And I go back, I said, wife, you need to reconsider the definition of your word pattern. The last time I did this was over a year ago. So it's not a pattern, but it is a pattern of stepping out beyond what I usually do. And that sometimes can be very difficult for all of us. So I have entitled this morning, Moving to the Next Level. And just want to talk a little bit about how we as a church are moving to a new level. And then certainly how we as individuals are and need to be moving to new levels of service. And I like to put that word at the end, service. How are we serving? Serving our church, family, serving each other. And as a text, I'd like to use Zacchaeus this morning. Zacchaeus is the story of a man, and we remember him from our childhood perhaps as a short man, and he was very short and had to climb up in a tree to see Jesus as he was passing by. And I'm reading from Luke chapter 19. Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was one of the most influential Jews in the Roman tax collecting business, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd, so he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree beside the road so he could watch from there. When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. "Zacchaeus," he said, "quick, come down, for I must be a guest in your home today." Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the crowds were displeased. "He's gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner," they grumbled. Now, just a little background here. I think we've probably all heard some about this, but you know, tax collectors were one of the most despised type of people. And in my version that I use here, notice that he was actually a Jew. But yet other Jews saw him as a devious sinner. In fact, in other passages, we see where Jesus is criticized for going with tax collectors and sinners. Well, tax collectors there are kind of mentioned separately. Why? They were allowed to extract whatever taxes they could from the people as long as they gave to the Roman government at that time what the Roman government demanded. And as we can see here, he became very rich when he pocketed the rest. So even though he was a Jew, he really served himself at the same time serving the Roman government. So he was in double jeopardy with the Jewish people around him. So very much despised. But yet Jesus chose him to go to his house. So meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "I will give half my wealth to the poor. Lord, if I have overcharged people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much." And Jesus responded by saying, "Salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a son of Abraham. And I, the Son of Man, have come to seek and save those like him who are lost." Now, there's quite a gap in here in my mind. I don't know what conversation occurred between Jesus and Zacchaeus. What caused him to suddenly say, "I'm going to give half of what I have to the poor, and if I've overcharged anybody, I'm going to repay them so many fold"? So something happened that changed Zacchaeus and moved him to a new level in his life that caused him, I don't know what he did after this, but I can assume that he no longer overcharged his fellow Jews he no longer collected more than he needed. Perhaps he wasn't even a tax collector anymore. Who knows? Perhaps he used even more money to help the poor. But the point is that he moved to a new level of service to others. And he started out by giving back all that he had taken from other people. Well, I'd like, of course, this morning to talk about our mission program and how we as a congregation have really moved to a new level of service. I'm going to talk about each of our works. And then as I close this morning, I'm going to talk to us as individuals and perhaps thinking about where we need to move as individuals as we improve our service to others or do other things. So you will always notice these are our programs, and I'm going to talk about each one of them and how some of these programs have changed us, changed some of us who have seen our missionaries, visited with our missionaries, which is usually the first step in going to a new level of service. You will always be able to see an update in the bulletin around our mission program in the mission corner. What you see in this slides this morning, I am putting together in a little booklet. And there are many sitting here today that I see who many months ago, this is something I have not done and needed to do, many months ago at a new member luncheon checked off that they would do things with our missionaries. And so what I'm going to do here is put together names and addresses and email addresses, because many of you said that I will pray for our missionaries. Another thing we did last year specifically for Jean Grenier and his family is we put Christmas cards on the back table. People took those cards and they sent a contribution to not only the family. We wanted to make this personal for the work, not only the work, but the family. And so we actually sent cards to the kids and Jean and on as Christmas gifts that did not have to be used for the work, but because they really scrape by up there. They just barely get enough to run the work. And of course, I'll talk about that shortly. So let me just kind of talk a little bit about our works. And we have many new members, and I do this periodically just to kind of update you on who we serve. But the first one here is Jean-Marie Ferreau. Jean-Marie lives in Verviers, Belgium. And so this kind of shows where Verviers is. It's right over very near the German border. And what's so interesting about this location is it's right in the middle of not only where our American soldiers died in World War I, but also in World War II. And so the place is scattered with American cemeteries that you can go and actually visit. It's a very touching place to visit and realize even the Belgian people, and Jean especially, is very thankful for our support there. And what's amazing here is when you go to Europe, it's only a five-hour drive. It's like driving down to Dallas and driving from Paris if you fly in there over to see the Ferreaus. Jean-Marie and Suzanne Ferreau have served the Lord since 1960, the early 1960s. He was baptized as a Christian. He has been a faithful servant of God. And what's interesting, they've lived in the same apartment in Verviers since 1973. And it's just an apartment. They rent. So they've rented since 1973. And their living room is, you can just barely squeeze six people in there. So they have served the Lord from these surroundings since 1973. They serve a congregation in Verviers. The congregation is made up mostly of African immigrants who have come into Belgium and have become citizens, many doctors, professionals, and there are locals that have also become Christians. We have made two trips to Verviers to visit that church family. And one thing, you know, and I know that Rick and Elliot discovered this. You have to go in order to see it. And that is the joy that the missionaries feel when you go and see them. Very few people go and see them. They don't even see people from their sponsoring congregations. And so when anyone goes to see them, and I'm not talking about the sojourners that go and help. I'm talking about people who help support their work monetarily like we do. And so the Faroes, they are so gracious and so hospitable. Now, we don't sleep at their house. There's no room. But they do. She serves wonderful meals and just loves. She is so hospitable. And she is kind of the church mother. She takes care of all the children. She takes care of all the people in need in that congregation. And when you go, what's so interesting is you experience a different culture. Now, we happened to be there one Sunday when there was a baptism. And you can see the young lady in the baptismal being assisted by one of the elders. And it's a big occasion. And in fact, the culture there, the tradition is that after baptism, they have a reception. And everybody from the church is invited. And so you can see Carol and Sherry and Lita here gathered around the young lady that was baptized and celebrating. And they all speak some English to some degree. This is the French-speaking part of Belgium. So they were sitting there talking. But it's a very joyous occasion. And it's a family occasion. I believe that this young lady's brothers and sisters were later baptized into Christ. So you get to see the culture. And for some of us to step out, it does mean going to the next level to go and visit and be of support to our missionaries. Now, you met Jean and Anne last week. He is our single missionary that travels each year to visit the supporting congregations. And he has to do this because he is never sure what support is going to continue from year to year. Every year, he will tell me, this church has dropped, I gained a little bit, and he's never sure. Imagine living that kind of life and the fact that how much faith you have in order to keep working for the Lord, knowing that your income could go away at any time. The congregation is very small. Now, this is where we as a congregation have gone to a higher level. Last week, $7,900 was contributed towards the building effort in Saint-Amboise, Quebec. And now my wife knows my memory's failing me, but I don't think we have ever seen that large a contribution for a visiting missionary in the 21 years that I have been with this congregation. And so that's a big thing for this congregation. But there's some history here. We have supported Jean Grenier for probably 20 years. And over the many years that I served as an elder, now as the Deacon of Missions, we weren't sure about this work. Should we support it? Should we support more for the building effort? And we were always questioning. What to do? Was the money going to the right place? So I made my first visit last year and stayed with them a few days. And I was so glad that Elliot and Rick could go this year, Stephanie, Janet. And I asked them specifically to look. How do you feel about this work? Is it viable? Should we put more money? And we always wonder, should we put more money into an effort where we see little growth? And of course, that's our human minds, as we've been talking about in Bob's class. Our human minds say, well, our money's not seeing any result. There's no growth in the congregation. But yet, I think now that Rick and Elliot have gone, John has a vision. It's not just to complete this building. It is to create a Bible camp and a Bible training school. And we support a Bible training school in Nigeria. And it started in 1922 with like 5 students. And now it has 60 students, 70 students, full curriculum, accredited. Why can't we see that same vision for Jean in Canada, where it's greatly needed? There is no preaching school. in Canada. And so with the return, I didn't come up with this idea. In fact, I was sitting over here in the fellowship room one Wednesday night, and Homer walks up to me and says, "By the way, Greg," and I must admit, if you remember way back, I was actually looking to move out of this job, and elders were not able to find anybody, so I had said, "Well, I will stay," and not out of duty, but you know, I will stay. It's not a difficult job. I can do this job plus what I wanted to do anyway. Well, they hadn't heard that message. It got lost in the mix somewhere, and so they had been talking, and they came up with the idea of taking $10,000 from our mission fund that's been sitting for, well, since Elliot was a youth minister, so 15, 17 years, I don't know how long, a long time, and every year, what can we do with this money? What can we do with this money? And we're not even using all of it. So it was their idea for us to move to the next level and support for Jean Grenier and take $10,000 and now seek matching funds. And I'm glad that, you know, Elliot's going to help out this on this effort by calling some of the supporting congregations. Every time I talk to Jean, he always says, "I don't like asking for money." And so now we're going to take on that for him and seek extra funds in order to complete this building so that we can get beyond that and move towards the vision of a preaching school in Quebec. It should be an interesting effort. Now, there's a list sitting out there. I finally saw the list. There's 10 people on that list right now that have signed up to go to Quebec next year. Now, I've been in this job long enough that there's a pattern. It is a pattern. People will say, "I'm going to go, I'm going to go." They don't go. They get to that time and they say, "No, I can't go." There are many reasons for not being able to go. Rick, do you know how many years did you do that? He did. And now we're trying to get Brian. Where's Brian? Is he here today? Brian? We've got to get Brian there. He's on the list. And he's already said, "Well, I'm going to go, but I can't go." He's done that a couple. We've got to get him there this year. Because once you go, you are changed. You're changed forever. First of all, you realize it's not difficult. Going to Canada especially, it's just like driving here. Except when you go into a restaurant and you start to order something, you have to find the English order taker. But other than that, it is very much easy to travel in Canada. So I challenge you. The first thing you need to do is get your passport. Now, our budget is limited. We have a $24,000 budget for mission work, and $17,000 of that goes directly to the missionaries for regular monthly support. The rest of that, then, I save, and I'll show you some of the other things we've been able to do, but we have a small amount, and it's less than $4,000, actually, to support travel. Now, the trips we made to Europe are self-supported, but to Canada, we support those because it is a working effort. So please, if you want to go during the working time of the year, then please start saving, because we'll be able to subsidize, but it'll be a small subsidy with the number of people. And that may amount to two groups this year. So, and of course, you saw last year where he lives. It's not a driving trip. Now, if you're retired and you want to drive to Canada, it's great, but it would take you 3 days. It's definitely a flying trip. All right, so in Jos, Nigeria. Now, this is not meant to read because this is going to become part of the booklet that tells a little bit about what we do there. But Solomon Agu became a Christian because of the contact with a member of this congregation. Now, if you've been here long enough, you know the Crute family, and it was Bobby Crute that first talked to Solomon Agu and caused him to become a Christian. And so now the long-range result is we have a Bible training school in Nigeria that supports 70 students. He's married. He has a couple of younger kids, older one. I can't remember all the children they have. But they live there at the School of Biblical Studies. We support them on a monthly basis. Well, they reached out to the church community, and they said, "We have some students that have no support." And so we took on three Liberian students, Lennon Cooper, his brother Jonathan, and a friend Calvin Johnson. They are currently in their third year at the School of Biblical Studies. Now, this is the powerful thing that's happening in Africa. We don't send missionaries. We train them in country. And these guys are going to go back to Liberia. Now, we would love to support. I have a vision to support that future work. But that would take a lot of money. So I'm currently working with Steve Worley. Steve Worley is a retired Air Force guy. He lives over in Tennessee, and somehow he's been involved in all the African work. It is his job to get stuff over there. He actually has a house in Jos where him and his wife stay when they go over for graduation in May. And so I've been talking to him about, you know, what we can do, and sometime I think that he's going to come and visit us and talk to us about supporting the work. And it may be that we are just the sponsors, and then that becomes the challenge of us going out and finding other congregations that come together to create a Bible training school in Liberia, which there is one, but because of a civil war that's been going that ended in 94 but has had a great impact, it kind of has not restarted. So we support these students. And they are graduating next year. In fact, Jonathan just got married this past summer. You know, here's one of my struggles. We provided $1,200 for these students to go home this summer from Jos to Liberia. And I really felt bad about that. I said, you know, should I be spending money on getting students home? Well, and I also provided money, $600 for them to come back to school. Didn't provide all. But the question was answered by what work they did that summer. Close to 100 baptisms during their summer work. And these guys report. They sent us a report. Hundreds of Bible studies and many restorations. And I said, I don't feel bad. It was a mission trip. It was a mission trip. So we will continue to help and support the students. Now hold that thought, because that's where my challenge comes in here in a little bit. Now we also support, it is our policy that whoever is going on a full-time mission trip, we used to throw the letters away all the time. I get them in my box, I look at them and say, well, we can't support this. And I changed and I said, whoever is going on a full-time mission trip, we're going to support them in some way. Not continuously, but we're going to support, give them a one-time contribution. And so here's an example. These two young families are now in Tanzania. They have taken their families, and those are, in fact, that's their current children's ages. And they have moved to Tanzania, and they're going to be there now for a period of time. Now, you talk about an example. And they have left and gone there without full support. They said, you know, if we wait for full support, we'll never go. And so they are now serving, and I stay in touch with Adam Hossius. And in fact, I have a small reserve that says, you know, if you have an immediate need, we can help you out. So we're connected with this kind of work. So we do support one-time efforts. Well, what that means is our help is scattered throughout Africa, what we do, what we support. We have Jos, we have the students from Liberia. One thing I didn't mention is that we have also supported in a roundabout way the new Bible school in Uganda. So this is their first building that you see here. And what we did is, how many participated in the book drive earlier this year? Brought their books down to the storage room down there. And Terry and I boxed those up. We mailed 25 boxes of books over to Steve in Nashville. Now, what's interesting is those books have still not left the United States, because they're in a container, and it takes time, and that container is actually being shipped by another organization called Helping Hands. So I do want to say this morning that if you have found more books that you'd like to get rid of, bring them, and I think you can put them down in the library. We'll box them up and keep sending them. Now, when it comes time to ship that container, we have committed to supporting that with $1,000 in helping support. And it's thousands of dollars to ship a container over there. So we will support that. And so here's another Bible school that is started and now growing in Uganda. So that kind of tells us about our works. So in our personal lives, what's holding us back from moving to a new level of service? What is that hurdle that you need to overcome that will cause you to serve others, to be of service to others, specifically in this church family? I have seen so many acts of service in this congregation in the past year. I think of a young family who probably less than a year ago became members here, transferred from somewhere north, came down here, didn't know anybody. And now, because of their service, someone will be able to celebrate Thanksgiving next week, as an example. We could all do something for someone else in this congregation. You know, as for me, I told you about the Liberian students. I have committed to go to Nigeria in May of 2015. Now, that's my hurdle. Because, see, if you read the news, well, first of all, I got this to deal with. And I was, you know, pulling these pictures the other day. And if you look at the picture in red, you can't read it, but that little city that's down in the lower left-hand corner of that red area, which is impacted by the area of terrorism right now, is Jos, where the School of Biblical Studies is. So I'm saying, well, do I want to go and do this? Now, add on top of that, you know, every few months we got this in Nigeria. And so I'm almost paralyzed and saying, do I really want to do this? You know, I called up Steve Worley. I said, Steve, what about the terrorism there? Well, Greg, there's a lot of people there. You know, what he's basically saying is, Greg, your chances of, you know, getting terrorized or, you know, about like getting struck by lightning. Now, do you think that helped me a lot? So now they wanted me to come this year. The students were begging me to come this year, and I was able to put them off and say, well, you know, expenses, because this is not going to be a, you know, a cheap trip. So I have to deal with this. You know, this is what happens in our minds, and Bob takes me back to Bob's class this morning, because we've been looking at how God sees things versus how we see things. And he said, how does God see our potential versus how we see our potential? Well, you know, we do this every day. I teach this tool in some of my classes called the ladder of inference. And what it is we see things like a video camera would see them. So I go online and I see terrorism, Boko Haram there down in Nigeria. And it just, you know, that's all it says. And I don't see areas and I don't see numbers, but I start to build these thoughts in my mind. I start to climb this ladder in my mind and I add, you know, everything else we've ever seen about terrorism and everything else I've ever seen about plane wrecks. And by the time I add everything together, I'm sitting at the top of this ladder, paralyzed, and not willing to do anything. And that's what we do every day in our lives, is we see things out there in our lives and we collectively put them together and we add up a picture that says, woe is me, I can't do anything, I'm paralyzed. And we sit very safely at the top of the ladder while the world goes on around us at the bottom, while people in need of service walk around about us, but we're safe. We do our little safe things. I don't know what you can do. I don't know what level you can move to. This is mine, is coming a year from now, is to be able to step on a plane and step off in Lagos probably. And that's another thing. For years and years, in every airport I ever travel in, it said, U.S. Embassy warning, Lagos does not have security. You know, mention no other airport but Nigeria. So I've got to overcome all that in order to serve the students that I said, yes, I'll be there. I don't want to say, can't go. So I want us to think about this morning, what is your next level of service? There may be those this morning here who have not even put on Christ in baptism because they're sitting at the top of this ladder saying, Well, as we've said, you've got to be perfect. I think Elliot said that. Nope, don't have to be perfect. You have to be a person willing to take that step, become a Christian. Or perhaps you need the prayers of this congregation just to serve at a higher level, to break you out of those barriers that have kept you trapped. Whatever the need is, please come while we stand and sing today.